to, I don't know if you brought this piece, but Tom recently asked me for the third or fourth time to reproduce Shostakovich's Gadfly.
Why don't you share all my secrets there, Rod?
And, of course, it has many, many beautiful pieces, but the one that Tom liked this time was called Romance.
There have been changes. I like different pieces over time, over a period of years. So that's reasonable.
Yes, of course it is. And, of course, Romance was used for a PBS detective series called Riley, Ace of Spies. I was going to say Ace of Spades. Ace of Spies, which goes a long time ago. But that, that, of course, was Shostakovich's dipping into the movie music, which he did to keep himself alive, both figuratively and literally, to earn money and not be killed by Stalin. And he didn't think much of these pieces, but they are gorgeous pieces of music.
Let's take a break here, and why don't you satisfy the FCC requirements and tell them who we are.
You are listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Community Radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. This is our year-end show, and we're basing it on hope in the future. And Tom probably has some what we would call commercials, but you don't call them out.
No, we don't call them commercials. And we are the guy you just heard talking, blabbing over there. That's Tom Rudd from Chicago, and I'm Tom Rest from Chico. And we do a classical stroll, and we are programmed every month in which there are five Thursdays, and we get the fifth Thursday, kind of like the fifth columnist of KZFR.
Well, at least one of us is.
I was going to say earlier, but I decided not to, that some of us were surprised at the election outcome, and some were not. So obviously, you were surprised. So
I wasn't surprised. I was horrified.
So we want to let all of
what it was. I was horrified.
We want to let all of our fans that are still listening to us know that A Classical Stroll is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters, you great folks out there, and by the Naked Lounge, locally owned for over 15 years at 118 West 2nd Street in the heart of downtown Chico. The Naked Lounge supports local art, music, and features tender, loving coffee, Chico Chai, Pacific Culture, and Tin Roof Bakery. Open from Tuesday through Saturday until 10 p.m. and Sunday and Monday until 8. The Naked Lounge also has craft beers on tap, and we also get valuable support from Baird Roofing Company. For a hole in your roof or a whole new roof, go to Baird. To have your home inspected for roof damage, you can call Baird Roofing at 342-1631 or visit BairdRoofing.com or stop by the office at 11025 Midway in Chico. That's in the south of Chico, folks. So, Thomas, where are we going?
We have played this next piece probably several times over the span of our 15 or 16 years. But I think it's very appropriate with, you know, I'm not making a political statement, but we obviously have a president that's a lot different than we normally would have. And he's already rattling the sabers, meaning the nuclear weapons. And this is a show that Studs Terkel put together in 1961 at the height of the Cold War. I think it was near the end of 61. We may have had the Bay of Pigs invasion. I can't remember.
I think Bay of Pigs was 60. I don't know when it was, but you're right.
It was 61. Okay. Because Eisenhower was had authorized it.
Okay.
But he authorized to do it, but he didn't authorize the date. And of course, Kennedy came in, and the CIA had it set up, and Kennedy agreed with it. So things were getting pretty hot. The Cold War was getting hot, and Studs decided to do something in regards to trying to calm things down. And the Italian prize, prize of 1961 was somewhat like a Nobel Prize, and nobody usually won it from America. Studs was the first one. He did it with Jim Unrath, who had just started this at the station for a few months. He was 21 years old, and he was the guy that spliced all this stuff together. If you Google Unrath and Terkel, you'll see a great story about it. But this is a radio documentary that won the prize, and it's simultaneously optimistic and pessimistic about the fate of all of us and humanity. And it is stunningly fresh, even though it's 55 years old. And as I'm looking at the clock, we better turn it on, otherwise we will run into the next hour. Studs Terkel's Born to Live, the Italian Grand Prize of 1961.
その時私たちは飛行機の飛んでるのをあの友達とどこだろうかいって上を向いて眺めてたんだ。
They were looking up at, in the sky trying to spot the airplane.
そしてピカッと光ったから私は伏せたような気持ちがします、
mm. but and then she thought that there was a very big flash.In the sky, so she hit her face on the ground.
そうすると、あの、その瞬間に飛ばされたような気がします。
で、she remembers that she must have been blown away by the impact.
そして意識が回復した時には、当たりの人は、当たりにいた友達がほとんど影を姿が見えませんでした。
And when she regained her consciousness, she couldn't find most of her friends. So they were either blown to bits or burnt. Or...
そして私の全身を見ますとパンティ一枚残っていて、そして今ケロイドとして残っていたところは皮膚が皮膚が50センチぐらい下がっておりました。
She says that all her clothes were torn away except the very undergarment, and her skin, where she has all her burns, the skin was just peeled off and hanging from her body. And she has that on her arms and legs and on her face.
そしてもう全身が熱かったので。近くの川へ飛び込みました。
Then she said it was so such an intense heat that she jumped into the nearby river, the small river that was running through the city.
すると友達が顔だけ海水から顔だけ出して、お母さん助けてくれ、お母さん助けてくれと言って泣き叫んでおりました。
She said that the her friends were in the river.I don't think I can say it.
Concerned about the fact that he's not going to be living in 10 or 15 years because of this atomic war that's coming up, this is the frightening part to me. Heck, when I was 9 or 10 years old, I was wondering if...
You were greedy.
Is the bomb going to have polywogs in it this year or not? You know, something like this. But here these kids are wondering, am I going to be alive?
It bothered them. It really did. And to have these remarks come out at home out of a clear blue sky, I wish I'd never been born. Oh, it's frightening. No, she just said, well, if the bomb is going to hit, I'm going to enjoy life while I can. I'll do what I please. Oh, what an answer. And what do you say?
And how old is she? 10?
9.
9.
I remember we talked a little about the guys, you know, thinking over different things. You know, putting down their head sometimes. And going back, saying, thinking over some memories. Well, what do you think? What are some of the things they think about, or what are some of the things they worry about? Or what are some of the things that the guys worry about?
Nothing.
They worry about what's going to happen to you when you grow older?
They were born to die, that's all.
You were born to die?
Yeah.
What about in between the time you're born and the time you die?
To die? What about in between the time you're born and the time you die? Man is a long time coming. To paraphrase the old Chicago poet, man may yet win. Brother may yet line up with brother. Who can live without hope? In the darkness, with a great bundle of grief, the people march. In the night, and overhead, a shovel of stars for keeps. The people march. Where to? What next? Two drummers on the island of Ceylon engaged in percussive battle.
It's a favorite pastime of the people on a Sunday afternoon after work, for example. You will find drummers trying to outdo one another.
How does the audience decide who wins, by the applause?
No, they themselves come together. That's the beauty of it. The two drummers, finding that they cannot be, one cannot outdo the other, they'll come together and play a final duet together.
Oh, that's marvelous. It isn't a question of one beating the other. They finally meet. And they merge their strength, fuse their strengths, or their arts.
I think that's also an old tradition of a comradely feeling, you see, that you won't allow, you have the competition, but at the end both meet on equal terms.
An American art critic observing a Goya hanging in the Prado.
This picture of the two men clobbering each other in the quicksand in the valley at the Prado is, first of all, a horrible picture, a shocking picture. After that, you begin to see it within the context of this magnificent landscape, all silver, somber, magnificently harmonious thing, and in the midst of it are these two bloody idiots. And you see that if you could only get through to them somehow and tell them what they're doing and how they are denying by their very action the beauty and the harmony and the mystery that surrounds them. They're denying the fact that they're equally children of God, equally brothers. Somehow they would recognize what Goya so poignantly makes you realize in looking at the picture.
My mother were quite sincere in believing in human dignity, in democracy, in the Christian beliefs of brotherhood, fellowship, love, mercy, justice, that sort of thing. And yet, at the same time, they accepted the what I call the ritual of segregation, just as though it were something immovable. And you had to be as decent as possible, you know, within this immovable something. And so I would go to church, and as a small child, and I was a rather critical small child, and I'd hear about Christian Brotherhood, and of course, none of my little Negro friends were at church. And I would come home and say, why? Why? And always the questions were gently unanswered.
The voice of a novelist from the deep south.
And when I would say, why, and say it too much, they would say, when you're older, you will understand. Now, that was the part where it began to really work in my mind, and I began to feel that part of my mind was segregated from another part of my mind. There was a great split there, you see. A great chasm had already entered my mind. And so I was believing something, and I was not living it. And that began to disturb me very much. Although in many ways I was just a kid, just a gay, funny, a ridiculous child. But in many ways I was asking what I always speak of as the great questions. Who am I? Where am I going? What is death? Who is God? Why am I here? And sometimes I think I worried my mother very much because I said, Mother, why are you my mother? Here now we all ask, children ask, and the Greeks ask, and existential philosophers ask, and every thoughtful person, who am I?
The voice of a novelist from Paris.
When I was young, I misunderstood the importance of the external world. I believed you can just do what you want and think what you think by yourself. And little by little, I learned that my own ideas was the reflection of things going around me, that my own life was the reflection of a lot of things going on in the world, that I was not at all a lonely person, and I did not invent and create my own self, myself, but it was in a most part of it, it was just given, and it was depending about circumstance very much, and that was the war, which was a big revelation about all that. And when we're going deeper and deeper in the experience given by the war, I discovered the tightness of the ties which tie me to the whole world.
The effort, it seems to me, is to, if you can examine and face your life, you can discover the terms in which you're connected to other lives, and they can discover, too, the terms in which they're connected to other people.
The voice of a young novelist from Harlem.
It's happened to every one of us, I'm sure, you know, that one has read something which you thought only happened to you, and you discovered that it happened 100 years ago to Dostoevsky. And this is a very great liberation, you know, for the suffering, struggling person who always thinks that he's alone.
For the rocks and mountains, you weep. For the rocks and mountains, you weep. For the rocks and the mountains, when the stars begin to fall.
A singer from South Africa remembers her mother.
Yes, she never went to school. All she did was work. All her life, she started working when she was about 10 years old. They used to work in, she was born in Swaziland. And to be able to live on a farm, they had to work for the white man who owns the farm. So that they didn't get paid. They just worked for a place to live.
Yet your mother, you say, had no schooling, no education, knew these songs.
Oh, yes, she knew most of them. Some of them are not as old as she would be, but most of them are. And she used to work for these white people. She spoke very good Afrikaans, which is Dutch. And she spoke English very fluently. You would never know she never went to school.
An elderly sharecropper from Tennessee laughingly answers a question about her capacity for work.
Did I cut trees? I wish you'd see the trees I cut. You know, I want to tell you one thing. If you think I'm telling you a story, go in the neighborhood down there. Now, my sister had a little boy. He named Willie Shelton. He yet lived down there on the place. And he used to haul the wood. He was about 10 years old. He wasn't large enough to do much cut. I'd cut, and he'd haul. And he'd give me half of the wood. I'd cut 5 loads of wood every day. 5 loads, he'd haul it. He hauled two loads and a half to my house and two loads and a half to his house. That's how I got my wood. I cut it. Yeah, cut big. Couldn't hardly meet your arm around. Wouldn't take me long. I'll tell you, I'm a good actor. You ought to know. You don't know what good work in me. I can yet do it. I can yet work.
And a Chicago poet quietly recalls her friend's capacity for life.
Vit, of course that wasn't her name, was a friend of mine who had that irrepressibility that just seems unconfinable, even in death. And that's why I wrote, carried her unprotesting out the door, kicked back the casket stand, but it can't hold her, that stuff and satin aiming to unfold her, the lid's contrition nor the bolts before. Oh, too much, too much. Even now, surmise, she rises in the sunshine. There she goes, back to the bar she knew, and the repose in love rooms, and the things in people's eyes. Too vital and too squeaking, must emerge. Even now she does the snake hips with a hiss, slops the bad wine across her shantung, talks of pregnancy, guitars, and bridge work, walks in parks or alleys, comes happily on the verge of happiness, happily hysterics, is.
Give me a big book.
Oh, yeah.
And a bottle of beer. Then be gay. I don't care. I feel just like I want a clown. Give the beer to play a drink because he's bringing me down. He's got a rhythm. Yeah. When he's so
operatic basso buffo remembers a celebrated colleague of the past who was known for his lust for life as well as for his artistry.
He is the most great actor, the most great personality.
He was.
I know in the world, yes. When you sing the Boris, oh yes, I have many, many Boris around, good, more good, or less. Mm-hmm. But Shalyapin remained the meister.
Was.
He go down in the street, near to that, with the skeletric figures, I remember, he attacked the monologue with one little brace of voice. He's trembling on the stage because he's near to fall down. And many Boris today ex oh Tristo Licor. What kind of sick man is this? He's not sick at all.
He actually felt the role. He wasn't just a singer, he was an actor.
He's not a singer, he's not an actor. Shalyapin, when they play Boris, is Boris.
He was Boris, yes.
Anybody else?
What I love about that. Because when Helena was telling it, she was laughing at the same time, exactly what he does. As he's telling you a story, he's laughing at the same time.
Well, he's really saying there's no place on earth like the world.
Exactly.
Yes. Oh, he means that. He really means
that. It's quite offensive to anybody who think we didn't have that over there.
Yes. Isn't that the essence of that song? In that song, there's no place on earth like the world.
That's it.
Sing it.
No, please.
This sums up that.
Let's sing it.
What is that?
No place on earth.
All right,
there's no place on earth like a world.
May we all start again?
Let's start again.
There's a chance that we're just flinging this off.
We are.
All
right.
There's no place on earth like a world. There's no place wherever you be. There's no place on earth like a world. That's straight up and take it from me. Never throw stones at your mother. You'll be sorry for it when she's dead.
And never throw stones at your mother. Throw bricks at your father instead.
Don't think we did that proudly.
I don't think anybody else.
Ah, the yo-yo. The voices of laughing men and laughing women. And the tellers of tales, tall and short.
You know, once, long, long, long ago, there was a little boy, and he liked to play the ukulele. Clink, 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 he was always playing the ukulele all over the place,
But you know, the grown-ups say, get away, we're working here. Go off by yourself, you're getting in our way.
That,
the boy's father was a magician. He had the magic wand. Make things disappear. I'm sorry to say I don't know much about telling stories. Gradually, now in my 41 years, I've just barely learned how to just a little bit tell a story, but it's taken me all this time to learn. A child learns how to talk, and they talk all the time. A man buys an automobile and he rides and forgets how to use his legs. And the fact is, let's face it, printing was invented and a lot of people forgot how to tell stories. You don't need to tell stories to your children at night. You buy them a 25-cent book at the local drugstore, or buy them a phonograph record, or switch on the radio or TV. You don't have to use your brains anymore. You don't have to make music, obviously. You don't have to be an athlete anymore. You turn on the TV and watch the best athletes in the world. Watch them use their muscles, and you sit back and grow a pot belly. You don't need to be witty anymore. You turn on the TV and watch an expert be witty. You don't need to be witty anymore. And, of course, the crowning shame of it all is for man and wife to sit back and watch the expert lover pretend to make love on this little screen there.
I don't ever intend to make my peace with such a world. There's something much more important than Cadillacs, Frigidaires, and IBM machines. No. And precisely one of the things wrong is this notion that IBM machines and Cadillacs prove something. People are always telling me how many bought Cadillacs last year. You know, and it terrifies me. You know, I always wonder, is this what you think the country is for? You know, and do you think this is really what I came here and suffered and died for? You know, a lousy Cadillac?
Because we love the world, we pray now, O Father, for grace to quarrel with it. O Thou, whose lovers quarrel with the world, is the history of the world.
An American university chaplain offering a prayer during commencement exercises.
Grant us grace to quarrel with the worship of success and power, with the assumption that people are less important than the jobs they hold. Grant us grace to quarrel with a mass culture that tends not to satisfy but exploit the wants of people. To quarrel with those who pledge allegiance to one race rather than the human race. Lord, grant us grace to quarrel with all that profanes and trivializes and separates men.
In South Africa, if you don't have a sense of humor, it would be difficult to survive. With all what's going on there, every once in a while, maybe once a year, we have a big feast where we slaughter a cow or maybe two sheep, and we cook and invite all our neighbors and the people around us to meditate to their our great grandfathers and mothers who died, and ask them to ask the Lord to help us go on living. And then the people eat and drink and they dance, and then they go back to their homes. And so we sing and we're happy. We try.
Oh, 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 oh.
After so many years, you know, in prisons and camp, and after so many years of this constant humiliation, and the SS tried to convince us that there is no hope for us, we really started to believe that there is no hope for us.
A former inmate of the Ravensbrück concentration camp.
We tried to believe that there would be a liberation someday. We tried and convinced ourselves and tried to cheer up the weaker ones that we are sure the Americans or the British or the Red Army would come very soon to liberate us. But it was so long, you know. Every day for us was like a year. We just, I think I would be right to say that we just lost the hope. We tried to convince ourselves that we hope, but we really didn't. I couldn't imagine that I could lie in a bed again, that I would have a breakfast again and a lunch and be a human being and walk on the street and listen to music. And perhaps lie in a hospital bed and die like a normal human being. I think there are simple people, German people, who believe that they are the Herrenrasse, the
Master race.
They were the people, and we were just Untermensch.
So traurig. Ein Märchen aus alten Zeiten, das kommt mir nicht aus dem Sinn.
We feel guilty because we have not the power to do what we want, or to prevent others to do what we don't want, and we feel sad because of all that. And then chiefly because we have felt the occupation, and we have hated the Nazis when they tortured and oppressed us, and we were in the resistance. We don't understand the people who have been in the resistance now do exactly the same thing to the Algerians that the Germans made for us. That's very difficult to understand. That's not understandable, and anyhow, we don't accept it.
Liberté, liberté sérieuse.
The parts of our nature that are torn open the wound that must not be healed. You know, in a sense, is what I like to write about. But they would like to say this wound has been healed. Therefore, we don't have to even read anymore about it. And this is very interesting about the people, isn't it? They want to be on the side of truth without ever facing truth.
Without facing.
They want to be on the side of virtue without ever knowing what virtue is.
Oh, sinner, what will you do? Oh, sinner, what will you do?
その時私たちは飛行機の飛んでるの友達と
They were looking up at, in the sky trying to spot the airplane
そしてピカッと光ったから私は伏せたような気持ちがします、
But and then she thought that there was a very big flash in the sky so she had a face on the ground
Heck, when I was 9 or 10 years old, I was wondering if...
You were greedy.
Jesus, is the pond going to have polywogs in it this year or not? You know, something like this. But here these kids are wondering, am I going to be alive?
It bothered them. It really did. And to have these remarks come out at home out of a clear blue sky. I wish I'd never been born. Oh, it's frightening. No, she just said...
They were worried about what's going to happen to you when you grow older?
We were born to die, that's all.
You were born to die?
Yeah.
What about in between the time you're born and the time you die?
Born to die? What about in between the time you're born and the time you die?
What is life, Robert? What is life? Well, I found life an enjoyable, enchanting, active, and sometimes a terrifying experience. And I've enjoyed it completely. A lament in one ear, maybe, but always a song in the other. And to me, life is simply an invitation to live.
The Irish playwright who defies the calendar and is ever young.
You know, God, or nature if you like, dumps a little boy at the tick of a clock, maybe at the dawn of a day, into life, and a tick after, he dumps a little girl beside him. So the boy and girl meet very early. And God says to the little boy, and God says to the little girl, be brave, and evermore be brave.
In one village, we had an experience which I'll never, never forget in my life.
An Indian actress recalls a visit to a village during the Bengal famine.
It used to be our practice that after the show, we would come out and just appeal for whatever people could give. We used to tell them in very few words, sometimes through song even, extra song, and we'll appeal to give whatever they could for the people of Bengal. And on one such day, in a very small village it was, after the show, when we came out in the auditorium, we found there was tremendous commotion. An old woman, she must be about 55 more, or 60, or she was bent, and she was dragging cow right into the auditorium. I couldn't understand what was happening, and before I could recover out of the surprise, there she came and said, take this. I had no word to say. What could I say? I said that, well, and that's about all I could. All the speech or all the appeal or everything was gone, forgotten. It was the old woman who said that, my child, I have nothing else to give. But take this cow. It still gives milk, you know. And as you say that children are starved without milk, please take this. I'm an old woman. I don't need very much milk. And till I live, village will see to it that I don't quite starve. You take this cow with you. And she insisted on taking the cow, giving the cow to us. What could we say? We didn't want to deprive the old woman of the cow. More than that, it would have been very difficult indeed to take the cow to Bengal. Luckily, we hit on some idea and said to her that, Grandma, please look after the cow for us till we are able to make some arrangement to take this cow to Bengal. And it is our cow, we know. But you are just there. I mean, who can look after the cow better than you? And that alone persuaded old woman to take the cow. That was the India of that time. And we wanted to depict that India. I'm afraid art is very, very pale compared to real life sometimes. Very pale indeed.
Out the trough with the dogs and hogs and things. For my children to have a better day than I had, that I don't mind doing it. And if it take me to have to lay down and go on home to my father, I don't mind doing that. It's for my children to get the freedom. I don't want my children to have the time I had. I had a time, children, y'all don't know. Don't nobody know what time I had. Oh, no.
Be nobody that'll put me out. Keep no hand on the plow. Tried it on at the gates of hell. Keep your hand on the plow.
Have to hear those best voices,
says an American poet as he recalls a childhood experience.
When I was a kid, my uncle used to have a tremendous collection of those scratchy old orthophonic Caruso recordings. and especially on rainy days, but all the time I had a passion for Caruso. I heard him a couple of times live, but even on scratchy recordings, I remember him best on scratchy recordings, because my memory of that is longest. But when you heard this voice, you not only heard the songs being sung, you suffered an expansion of your imagination. You discovered how well it was possible to sing these songs. Your very imagination was enlarged. You had a larger sense of expectation. You couldn't have anticipated that these songs could have been sung so well. On two levels. In the first place, you'd think, just in the animal quality of the singing, Caruso would hit a high note, and you'd say, this is as much as the human voice can do. You couldn't ask more of the human voice. And then he'd be beyond that. He'd exceed the expectation. But there's another thing. It took centuries to form the kind of consciousness that would sing these songs in this way, the kind of musical intelligence that touched the songs perfectly at every moment. We're enlarged by it. And you have to hear those best voices. You have to open your imagination to Job asking his question. And when you have really heard that question ringing, you know the difference between a great question and a lesser one. And then you know the size of a human decision.
As human beings, we have to remember that if the issues between East and West are to be decided in any manner that can give any possible satisfaction to anybody, whether communist or anti-communist, whether Asian or European or American, whether white or black, then these issues must not be decided by war. We wish this to be understood, both in the East and in the West. There lies before us, if we choose, continual progress in happiness, knowledge, and wisdom. Shall we instead choose death, because we cannot forget our quarrels? We appeal as human beings to human beings. Remember your humanity and forget the rest. If you can do so, the way lies open to a new paradise. If you cannot, there lies before you the risk of universal death.
An eminent British philosopher poses the great question, and an American architect designer recalls how that question came to be.
I said, if Einstein is right, in due course, then he is going to affect the other scientists, and the other scientists are going to affect all technology, and they're going to finally affect society. So I said, if that is so, why don't we look ahead? And part of when I spoke to you about a transcendental position, one of the things I said, let's go ahead and see what the world will be like if Einstein is right. That year, let's see this, we're talking 1935. A few months later, Lisa Meitner and her associate developed the first concept of the fission. Very shortly after that comes fission, and Einstein then when they were pretty sure that they had it, was asked to go talk to Mr. Roosevelt about it. You may remember, the only man who could probably convince Roosevelt of its really important aspect. When fission was developed, then it proved Einstein's formula to be right. The amount of energy in the various masses proved to be exactly what his formula said. Therefore, a practical application, the first practical application, was a bomb destroying a man. I think that no, it didn't hit people in Hiroshima as hard as it hit Mr. Einstein. I'll bet.
I'm sure he was.
I think he was really shocked. And he became really the scientist who alone really stood up in his last days. He did everything possible to try to make science think about its responsibilities.
We have gathered here in Princeton. This institution of research and scholarship represents a spiritual bond encompassing all countries. I am grateful to all for assisting us in our work.
We have a series published in the Soviet Union of books about great people, and I just happened to read the one about Einstein.
Когда я эту книгу прочитал,
and after reading this book,
как роман,
it was like a novel to me.
День, ночь, читал.
I read it day, night, until I finished it.
Я сказал себе, я буду писать о нем.
And then I decided I have to write about this man.
A Soviet playwright discusses the hero of his forthcoming drama.
Это образ, который меня потряс.
But I want to say that the image of this great man has terribly impressed me as a human being.
И потряс потому, что в нем есть нечто такое человеческое.
This man has something in him which is so humane, so
которое его
superb.
Идея, которая меня, так сказать, ведет, образная идея,
the
это
idea
его
which is guiding me in this play,
трагедия в чисто греческом ее значении.
Is his tragedy. A tragedy in the Greek interpretation of this definition.
Невольная вина.
He is guilty, but he is not guilty.
Моя основная мысль, драматургию, как актер, он понимает, о чем mm-hmm. я говорю, сказать.
The main idea by which I'm guided and which is actually giving the tragedy its sujet.
Что этот человек, который пришел на землю из будущего.
Is the following, that this great man came to us from the future into the present.
Которому было трагически трудно в этом неустроенном.
It was tragically difficult for this man to live in this troubled,
разделенном
world,
и злобном
divided
мире.
And hostile world.
Я поехал в Принстон. Как
I went to Princeton.
Правоверный мусульманин в Мекку.
Like a pilgrim goes to Mecca.
It's an odd thing. Politics, I don't know why, but they seem to have a tendency to separate us, to keep us from one another. While nature is always and ever making efforts to bring us closer together. And the last gift that nature has given us, a very extraordinary one, a very dangerous one, a very beautiful one, is the atom bomb. Nature through the atom bomb says, here you are, power of darkness or the power of light, choose what you wish. And mankind is going to choose the power of light.
I hope that we will make the wise choice because everybody has agreed that the choice has to be made and that extinction is a possibility of our generation, the first generation of mankind that's ever had this possibility in front of it.
A British writer of science fiction in a moment of conjecture.
When you look out at the universe, there are 100,000 million suns in this galaxy of ours alone. And if only, say, one in 10 has got planets, that may mean that to every single person on this Earth, there's somewhere an inhabited world. That's about the number of inhabited worlds in this universe. One to every man, woman, and child on this Earth. Well, it seems very unlikely that many of those who won't be races that would regard us as somewhere back in the Stone Age.
A superior race, as you said. You mean?
Well, I mean morally, intellectually, philosophically,
no
wars, technologically. Well, a superior race cannot have war because war is a self-liquidating activity. I am optimistic about the outcome.
Either to destroy himself or to be perhaps even more noble than ever, is that it?
Oh. Yes.
So the choice is ours.
The choice is ours, and it's really a privilege to be born in this age, the most critical in the whole history of mankind. I remember the old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. Well, that curse has been visited on us, but I don't think it really is a curse. It's a privilege.
And it could be a blessing, too.
It could be.
I've often wondered who would inherit the earth. We understand that the meek may inherit the earth, and of course that leaves us out. Will it be mammals, or will it be fish? Or insects?
Distinguished American astronomer on the subject of man, the elements, and risk.
In wondering about the future, and without actually trying to make a horoscope of humanity or of life on the Earth, I have just tried to list down sometimes what are the risks we suffer. What will eliminate man if he is eliminated from the surface of the Earth? Will it be the sun running down or blowing up, either one of those, freezing man out or incinerating him? No, because the sun's a good, steady star, and as you know, is pretty well thermostated to run for, say, 10,000 million years at its present rate, so the sun isn't going to play out. How about stars colliding with us? No, they're too far apart. Collisions happen too infrequently. Say, in the next 1,000 centuries, no chance of that. I mean, a very low chance. Well, how about the Earth getting out of its orbit and running away and freezing to death in empty space? Or plunging into the sun and boiling up? No chance. We know from our celestial mechanics that the orbit of the Earth is constant and will stay just about put. And so I think we're safe from sun, from star, from Earth. So now, must I say, that it looks pretty safe on man for this future you talk about for the next 1,000 centuries? Yes? No. Because he had one deadly enemy that I didn't mention, an enemy that's at his throat and may succeed in returning him to the fossils and leaving life on the Earth to the cockroaches and the kelp. You know what that enemy is, of course? That's man himself.
Will there be time to find salvation? Will there be time to find salvation? Will there be time to find salvation? When the stars begin to fall.
This picture of the two men clobbering each other in the quicksand in the valley at the Prado is, first of all, a horrible picture, a shocking picture. After that, you begin to see it within the context of this magnificent landscape, all silver, somber, magnificently harmonious thing, and in the midst of it are these two bloody idiots. And you see that if you could only get through to them somehow and tell them what they're doing and how they are denying by their very action the beauty and the harmony and the mystery that surrounds them. They're denying the fact that they're equally children of God, equally brothers. Somehow they would recognize what Goya so poignantly makes you realize in looking at the picture.
Who am I? Where am I going? What is death? Who is God? Why am I here? Here now we all ask, children ask, and the Greeks ask, and existential philosophers ask, and every thoughtful person, who am I?
A British scientist writes of a particular moment in his life. On a fine November day in 1945, late in the afternoon, I was landed on an airstrip in southern Japan. I did not know that we had left the open country until unexpectedly I heard the ship's loudspeakers broadcasting dance music. Then suddenly, I was aware that we were already at the center of damage in Nagasaki. The shadows behind me were the skeletons of the Mitsubishi factory building, pushed backwards and sideways as if by a giant hand. What I had thought to be broken rocks was a concrete powerhouse with its roof punched in. I could make out nothing but cockeyed telegraph poles and loops of wire in a bare waste of ashes. I had blundered into this desolate landscape as instantly as one might wake among the mountains of the moon. The moment of recognition, when I realized that I was already in Nagasaki, is present to me as I write, as vividly as when I lived it. I see the warm night and the meaningless shapes. I can even remember the tune that was coming from the ship.
Yes, I'm gonna ask him. Where is you, is, or is you ain't my baby?
This dissertation was born at that moment. For the moment I have recalled was a universal moment. What I met was, almost as abruptly, the experience of mankind. On an evening sometime in 1945, each of us in his own way learned that his imagination had been dwarfed. We looked up and saw the power of which we had been proud loom over us like the ruins of Nagasaki. The power of science, for good and for evil, has troubled other minds than ours. We are not here fumbling with a new dilemma. Our subject and our fears are as old as the tool-making civilizations. Nothing happened except that we change the scale of our indifference to man. And conscience, for an instant, became immediate to us. Let us acknowledge our subject for what it is. Civilization, face to face with its own implications. The implications are both the industrial slum, which Nagasaki was before it was bombed, and the ashy desolation which the bomb made of the slum. And civilization asks of both ruins, is you is, or is you ain't, my baby?
Let us pray. Lord, number us, we beseech thee, in the ranks of those who went forth from this university, longing only for those things for which thou dost make us long. Men for whom the complexity of issues only served to renew their zeal to deal with them. Men who alleviated pain by sharing it. And men who were always willing to risk something big for something good. So may we leave in the world a little more truth, a little more justice, a little more beauty than would have been there had we not loved the world enough to quarrel with it for what it is not, but still could be. O God, take our minds and think through them. Take our lips and speak through them. And take our hearts and set them on fire. Amen.
Sometime I look up. I don't have to do nothing. Just stand and look up there. Just look up toward the Father. When I look up toward the Father, the tears come rolling down the entire bouquet under my neck. Say, Lord, here I am. When the storm, the wind get to tossing it, kick from side to side, I call up the boss and tell him, say, Lord, here I am. Ain't even got a shelter. Ain't even got a frame around me. You know me. Remember me here. Take care of me. Because I'm striving to make him my home. I'm working to make him my home. I'm bearing her name to make him my home. I'm bearing my burden. I'm bowing down in the morning. Yes, I'm crying in the evening sometimes, you know. Trying to make him my home. That's what it takes. I got to love everybody. I can't hate nobody. If you do me wrong, I still don't hate you for it. No, because I'm on my way, and I don't see nothing to turn me back. So I'm on my way.
I'm on my way. Well, I'm on my way to Canaan land. I'm on my way for Canaan land. On my way, Canaan land. On my way, glory, hallelujah. I'm on my way.
Man is a long time coming. Man will yet win. Brother, the earth over may yet line up with brother. You can't hinder the wind from blowing. Time is a great teacher. Who can live without hope? In the darkness, with a great bundle of grief, the people march. In the night, and overhead a shovel of stars for keeps, the people march. Where to? What next? Where to? What next?
Dama.
Dama.
Yeah.
Dama.
Dama. Dama. Dama. Dama. Dama.
Dama. Dama. Dama.
Dama. Dama. Dama.
Dama. Dama. Dama. Dama.
Dama.
Happy.
The voices heard were those of Miyoko Harabasa and Joan Takada, Perry Miranda and a Chicago street boy, a Midwest suburban couple, T.P. Amara Singh, Alexander Elliott, Lillian Smith, The Weavers, Simone